And we hand this to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and jump right into the questions. We'll start with President Engler. You can answer this first one. What did this year's economic and benchmark reports reveal? What are the big takeaways?
Well, we made it. Make sure we got my. There we go.
There we go.
Make sure everything's working right here. That was a stunning video, by the way. You're all going to want. We'll try to email that to all of you. All of the answers to the question that Kimberly just asked are on a little card on your table, but it really sums up some important economic impact data that Patrick Anderson and his company have worked on. They've done this over several years, but it really shows how the impact of these three universities working together, and this is what the University Resource Corridor is about. It's a collaboration represented by three powerhouse universities. Some $18.7 billion contribution to the U.S., to the Michigan economy, that if we suddenly were vaporized and weren't here, that would all disappear. And this is a contribution economically that is felt in a lot of ways. Tax revenues are impacted positively, growth of companies, startup of new businesses. And some of these, I'm not going to try to read the card, you can all do that, but what this means for us, as me temporarily and for Mark and Roy as permanent leaders of these institutions, is that we recognize our responsibility to this home state and to the taxpayers who have invested in these universities to keep the research engine humming, to keep the quality of teaching up, to continue to recruit our best students and get them prepared to go out and make a contribution. And when they do, the state of Michigan's a big beneficiary.
Yeah. President Swishol.
Well, you know, to put this $18.7 billion in a bit of context, the total economic productivity, a lot of which you all are responsible for in our state, last year was about $440 billion. So we're talking about 4% of our state's economy by just these three institutions represented up here. When most people think of higher ed, they think of a place to send your kids to school or your alma mater, and people come up and shake our hands and say, I went to Michigan and graduated in 1979, et cetera. But we're a lot more than that, and that's an important idea that we're struggling a little bit to get out to the public. In addition to educating talented students and the future workforce, we're an engine for innovation in the state. You know, the research and development that gets done at our universities results in all kinds of stimulation of business activity throughout the state. And then I think each of us in a different way are very responsible for the high quality of life here in our state. At Michigan and MSU, thousands and tens, hundreds of thousands of people will converge in our towns on fall weekends to watch a football game. And think of the economic activity in the Ann Arbor region that comes over up in Lansing that comes from a sporting event or a fantastic musical event. So we're really also a home for culture and sport. So think of what our great state would be like without our three institutions. And it adds up to $18.7 billion plus a whole lot more.
Well, I guess the only thing I would add is that there's not a region in the state that isn't impacted in some way by the URC. It's not just the students that come to the three institutions, but alumni. I think there's 670,000 living alumni living in the state of Michigan from the URC institutions. So the impact is great in each region. And you can look at the economic prosperity regional index on, I think it's something like URC, UMich, or URC Mich, MICH.org, and see what the impact is in your region on the economic prosperity index.
And just to pick back a little bit off of that, President Wilson, you can answer this next question first. President Engler, I know he mentioned that the URC contributed $18.7 billion to the state's economy last year in 2017. That's more than 20 times the state's combined funding total for these three universities. How do you feel about providing that level of return?
Well,
So that's a big number. I'm sorry.
Right. No.
It's a big number. And it's kind of hard to put your arms around. So if you kind of look at it in a different way, if you were to divide that number by all of the households in the state of Michigan, it would equate to about $4,800 per household. Now, it's you know, more than just numbers, obviously. It's the talent and it's the technologies that are come from the three institutions. For example, at Michigan State, you have the facility for rare isotope beams, which is $730 million, I understand. You know, just think in terms of the number of jobs and that has generated in terms of construction, architecture, design, for many years, actually. And then at Michigan, you have the transportation research, what's it called, Mark?
M-City.
Yeah, M-City, but it's which basically does, you know, all kinds of mobility-related research for private companies, whether it's smart curbs or vehicle visibility, you know, just all kinds of things. And then at Wayne State, certainly, we have the PRB, the Perinatal Research Branch, which is in the second 10-year funding cycle. The only research branch outside of NIH, the only clinical research outside of NIH, and that has been showing a tremendous amount of advances in terms of prenatal care and infant mortality. And I should also add, just down the street is the new Mike Gillery School of Business, which just was erected and finished without any state support. So that's a huge investment for the community without state support.
And that school will educate some 4,000.
4,000 per year.
Yeah.
What, total?
Yeah.
4,000.
President Engler, you can.
Well, I think Roy's really touched on, but just take FRIB, which is the acronym we use for that Federal Rare Isotope Beam facility. That is going to draw in probably reservations are probably in the 1,400-1,500 range already. Scientists from all over the world wanting to come here. Lots of other nations, they'll be studying and researching at that facility. It is really a $1 billion investment by the time it's all in. That's pretty spectacular, and that's another way that there's a contribution to the economy of this state. Those researchers are going to come here. They're going to stay here for a short period of time. They're going to spend money. And they're going to obviously hire and attract other students and graduate students. So this is a big example, but there's 100 little examples, because all of this economic activity that surrounds research on our respective campuses, the real payoff is when those go out and become private sector investments and small companies get started and we start to see that kind of growth. We were here and have been here during good times and bad, but when the times are better and we've got our Michigan graduates, Michigan University graduates starting businesses, those result in sustaining kinds of investments that really help transform a state. And that's what we have the potential to be, because these three universities and the magnitude of what gets done here, we get so competitive with each other that we sometimes overlook that together, our region here in the state of Michigan can go up against almost any region anywhere in the country, or indeed the world. So it's a powerhouse.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the reasons why I think it's important to do studies like this that show the economic impact is I think support for higher ed, public higher ed, is dwindling around the country, and certainly here in the state of Michigan over the recent decades. There's absolutely compelling data to show that a state's investment in higher education correlates with per capita income in the state. Now, 20 or so years ago, the state of Michigan was 20th in the nation in per capita investment in higher ed. And now, my dad, 20 years ago, John. Okay.
That's the right time period, yeah. Kind of a golden era in there.
The golden era,
yeah.
The 12-year golden era. We are now 43rd and heading south in per capita investment in our children's education. And then right now, nationally, we're 36th in per capita GDP. You're business people, you know, in order to succeed in business, in order to succeed as a state, you have to invest. And you know, we have to invest in our people, our human capital, our human resources by educating them to their full capacity. And then we have to invest in the research and development that allows us as a state to remain nationally competitive. These three universities generating $18.7 billion stand shoulder to shoulder with the great clusters of universities in our country. And if we have the same level of public support that we enjoyed perhaps when you were all in school or when I was in school, think of how much wealthier and more robust the state that we all live in and love would be.
All right, the next question, you can answer this one first. I'm going to talk about talent. It's been the hot topic for our state for some time now. What did the report disclose, and what can we do with that information from the report?
Sure. So the report shows that amongst our three universities, we're educating about 140,000 students. So that's an enormous number of students. We're actually the leading producer amongst all the states of MDs and PhDs in the biosciences. So we're actually producing educated people in areas that are great for the future economy. There's a lot of discussion about whether our kids might be, you know, better off in the skilled trades, for example, and for absolutely sure we need electricians and plumbers and tradespeople. We're suffering from a shortage of that in the state. We employ very large numbers of people on our three campuses. My own university in the last decade has done almost $4 billion in capital projects. So that's a huge amount of skilled trade and business we're generating. But the future is going to be, the race for future success will be to the educated. Engineers and technologists, computer scientists, but more broadly, people educated in the liberal arts, the full set of skills will be necessary to be competitive in a future economy. You know, we're in an era now where you carry around the world's information in your pocket. You could look up anything you need to know. What you need to learn is how to ask and frame important questions, how to judge facts, how to solve problems, and then also how to do so in a collaborative environment. And that's what higher ed does, and we're doing it to the tune of 140,000 students at a time.
President Wilson states they benefit from URC alums. Could you kind of elaborate on the talent?
Yeah, so let me first of all just say that there are 15 really fine universities in the state, and I see Dan Hurley here, who's heading up the MASU, Michigan Association of State Universities, and I see Ora Peskovitz, who's the president of one of these fine universities. You know, the difference in the three, obviously, is that we are research universities, and so we're going to have many more graduate students than the other universities, and professional students. For example, I think Mark mentioned it, you know, 42% of the physicians in the state of Michigan will have gotten their degree at one of these three universities. And then once they get their degree, they can pretty much go anywhere in the country. But a large percentage of them decide to get their further training here in the state of Michigan. And statistics show that where you get your training in terms of your internship and your residency is it's more likely that you're going to live in that area after your training is over. So it's not just the people who get the actual degrees from our institutions, but then who stay on and train at the many different facilities that are for training and then decide to stay. And then you look at that, that's just on the professional side, but on the graduate side, Wayne State has about 40% of our student population is on the graduate side, and I'm sure that Michigan and Michigan State probably has some similar proportion. And Mark mentioned that the per capita income of the economic prosperity of states is directly related to the income of the people in the state. And certainly, if you have a degree, a graduate degree, your income is going to be much higher than if you don't have a graduate degree. And so that also just feeds into the economic prosperity of the state.
Sure. I know all three universities also worked on the Amazon bid as well, and we know we didn't get it, but that's still an example of how Michigan
I'm
is.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think one of the benefits of the three universities working together is that both from a formal and informal structural perspective, that we're used to working together. So when there's an opportunity to have a response, a coordinated response from a research university perspective, we're used to working together, and we can respond similar to what you just said in terms of the Amazon project. We didn't get it, but certainly all universities participate in some way, but the three research universities, because of our ability to work together, was very instrumental in the application that went in.
Yeah. And it's an example of how we're trying to make Michigan stronger and more competitive as well. President Engler, your thoughts on talent?
Well, I think, let me just touch on a couple of things. Mark commented about talent, and one of the things I think it's important, it's not really an either or kind of choice, because we need the talent at all levels. We need outstanding data scientists or medical doctors, but we also do need the skilled trades, and those tech jobs have become blue tech jobs. They're not blue collar anymore, they're blue tech. And whether it's anybody's vehicle, nobody can fix their own vehicle anymore. You have to have the computer diagnostics to tell you what's going on. And even then, sometimes it's hard to get it fixed. But the other part of this is that look at Detroit and the rebuilding of Detroit. Look at the artisans that are needed, people that can lay brick or do plaster and do decorative work. These are skills. Now, at the same time, if they're going to be in a business, then they need business skills. The involvement of government in everybody's business means you can't just put your shingle out. And so there's a way for us to be more collaborative. One of the things that I think is important that is a priority for some of the work that's being done, I think, at some of our universities, and I think it was nice to mention the other presidents who are here, but we need to bridge these gaps and get more of our students out with real internships. I mean, and get opportunities in the community, and that's where people here in this audience today and the Chambers of Commerce, the Manufacturers Association can help. I think that to make that real, to have people have this experience, we all had the privilege of speaking with some of these young students who are here today, and an array of different careers were mentioned, but almost in each case they would be advantaged if they had an opportunity while they were doing their study to have some hands-on practical experience. And the idea is that everybody gets skills. Nobody should drop out, because the gig economy will even punish somebody who drops out without skills. It is not for everyone. It's for people who have a skill that they can market and sell and obviously perform. So I think that the education strength that historically was Michigan is important. I've often talked about the needing greater strength in the K-12 system. That's especially true if we look at demographics. We're all facing a state where there'll be 16% in 10 years, 16% fewer graduates in our high schools. So there's gonna have to be a reallocation of who's gonna get the students or where they're gonna come from. We may all be a little bit smaller, but on the other hand, maybe if young people are prepared, we can educate even more, and that would be the better outcome.
Well, that brings me to my next question. President Engler, you can answer first. What are URC universities doing to make sure that a college education remains affordable and accessible to young people from the full range of economic circumstances in our state?
Well, we're all raising money rather in dramatic fashion, trying to get an LH Business Center school building built, or the new building up at Michigan State. That tomorrow we'll have a big announcement on that, our largest single gift ever. So the philanthropy is important. Any of you in the room who want to donate, we see any of us after. At the same time, we're also trying to, we've gone through and worked with our advisors, and the provost's office led an effort to make sure that anybody who starts and says, I think this is what I want to study, there's a path to finish in 4 years. I mean, one way to reduce the cost of college is have people graduate in 4 years. Way too many have been enjoying the life. I mean,
five to 6 year plan.
Yeah, I mean, that plan. So we need to, but we also recognize that some people, maybe that became an economic necessity, and maybe they were stretching it out because it was hard to pay for the credits. We tried to even change that so that there's an opportunity to take more credits without paying more, so you can accelerate your work. At the same time, every one of us have invested heavily in financial aid strategies. But Mark made the point, the legislative support has not been there, and it's interesting. I hope there'll be a gubernatorial debate here, because we went through a whole primary with a lot of candidates. Almost nobody was talking about higher education. And you know, that would be good to get that back on the agenda, because I do think that that's a very important part of the state. And we did have some success a few years back, but it was a high priority, because this is a knowledge economy, and you don't get that, unfortunately, playing video games. You got to actually, you got to go learn something.
Sure, President Wilson.
Well, let me start off by saying that I think keeping college affordable is a shared responsibility. So it's not just on the universities, but it's on the state also. But certainly it's also part of a university's responsibility. And I think all of us, the three of us as well as the other 12 universities in the state, tried to do their best. At Wayne State, about 58% of our students are Pell eligible. And about 90% get some sort of financial aid. Last year, we started a program called Wayne Access. And every freshman last year who were eligible, and that turned out to be about 1,100, got their entire tuition and fees paid for without any out-of-pocket cost. We're extending that this year. It'll be, we have the largest freshman class ever in the history of Wayne State this year, by the way, and so it's a bigger class, but it's 1,200 students will be eligible, and they will pay no out-of-pocket costs. Another thing that we just started this year is this Warrior Way Back program. You know, there are a lot of students, you know, John mentioned about the fact that some students don't finish. You know, some students don't finish. They have a lot of different reasons why they don't finish. A lot of times it's financial. But the problem when they don't finish is that oftentimes, if it's financial and they owe the institution money, they can't even get their transcript to go out and get a job. Or they can't transfer to another university because they can't get their transcript. And so we started a program called Warrior Way Back, where if you went to Wayne State and you didn't finish for financial reasons and you owe a certain balance, we will allow you the opportunity to come back to school and work that balance off by staying in school. And so, for example, if you owe, you know, $10,000, then after your first semester, you will waive a certain percentage of that. Second semester, you're still in, we'll waive another, so that the entire debt is wiped out and you will have be able to get your degree. We started this year. We started as a pilot, and therefore we limited to just 50 students. But we're going to extend that next year based on the success this year to more students.
Yeah, so you know, whenever I speak to a general public audience, this is the first question that always gets asked, and everyone's concerned about how they're going to afford sending their kids to school. And public education used to be accessible to everybody, and now it only seems to be accessible to people from families that are already successful. At the University of Michigan, that's a huge problem, and we've confronted it with a consistent investment in financial aid. You know, we have advantages at U of M. We're a 200-year-old university, so we've literally had centuries to build up our resources, to establish a culture. We have a Board of Regents that prioritizes affordability and accessibility in the very front of mind. One of our board members, Andrew Richner, is here today back at Table 15, and Andrew and the other regents are all strongly supportive of making sure that when we're pursuing our research ambitions or the next book that our professors want to write, all of us are thinking about how we're going to make an accessible and affordable education available at Michigan. And you know, similar to the other institutions represented by my colleagues, we've made a big investment, particularly in need-based financial aid, because truth be told, you know, tuition at Michigan is almost $15,000 a year. Tuition at Princeton, my alma mater, is $60,000 a year. So, you know, if you're a family that actually can afford it, $15,000 to get a Michigan education is a fantastic deal. It turns out, though, the median income in our state is only $65,000. That's the median income. So think about paying a $15,000 tuition bill if your family only makes $65,000 before taxes. So what we did a year ago is launch something we call the Go Blue Guarantee. It's a financial aid program targeted at families in the lower 50% of our state's economy. So any family $65,000 of family income or below, just as Roy said at Wayne State, we offer a four-year guarantee of free tuition and free no fees. You have to get accepted. Admission is very competitive. We accept in about 40 or 45% of in-state students. But the goal here is to announce and advertise this in a way that the seventh grader sitting around the dinner table with his parents, and those parents say, go do your darn homework tonight. Don't go out and shoot baskets for another hour like I used to when I was a kid. They can say that with the aspiration of that if their kid does well, they can afford to send their kid to college because we've worked out a way to help them. You know, what we're asking you as fellow citizens, as voters in the state, as political and business leaders, is help us with that investment. So we're a very competitive industry, higher ed, and several other states are now matching this Go Blue Guarantee. But the two neighbors of ours, Illinois and Ohio, they're matching it because their state legislature's stepping up and paying for it. So wouldn't it be interesting to challenge our gubernatorial candidates to come up with some kind of college guarantee? You work hard, you get accepted, we'll help you pay. Wouldn't that be a nice gift to give to the next generation, especially during good economic times?
Kimberly, why that point that Mark just made is so important. Michigan State alone accepts more Pell Grant students than the entire Ivy League. The entire Ivy League. We all got friends Ivy League education, but one school, more Pell Grant than the entire Ivy League.
All right, we have a little less than 5 minutes for my last question. I want to make sure we get it in. What's next for the URC, and how will your institutions impact the future of our state? I'll start with you, President Slishkel.
Yeah, so, you know, we're doubling down, and I really embrace the notion that our mission as a great public university is to serve the public. We serve the public by doing research, and I'm trying to encourage our researchers to pick topics that are timely and important, topics that help people. You know, we have a huge biomedical and health system, and you know, they're all working on researching new ways to diagnose and treat disease, as are medical schools of my colleagues. But in engineering, in physics, in math, in business, you know, the idea is to focus on society's needs in the years ahead, and continue to compete to bring resources and people into our state. A lot of students at U of M come from other states. Some people criticize that. I actually think it's really good and important. If we can bring people here, get them to learn how beautiful the state of Michigan is, what the quality of life we have is, what the economic opportunities are, we're gonna get them to stay, and even if they leave, they're gonna be our advocates. So we're doubling down on our commitment to Michigan.
President Wilson.
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, first of all, we believe in accountability, so we do benchmark ourselves against other research clusters throughout the country. I think there's six others. I think there's seven altogether. And a few years ago, we decided to, and there's a number of metrics that we measure ourselves against. A few years ago, I suggested that we have a composite index that looks at everything together, and it turns out that we're second among all the other research clusters around the country, so it's pretty good. But we're not first. And so there are things that we can improve upon, and one of the areas I think we can improve upon is our licensing technology, that based on the size of the research portfolios that we have, that as a group, that we probably don't license technology to the same level as some places, for example, in Northern California, for example. And so we need to look at where we stand in terms of some of the individual components of the metrics and make sure that we're paying attention to those and we're continuing to improve.
I'll quickly say that Michigan State has a model that I think works, and it works for the URC as well, and that's the whole history. Our legacy is the premier land-grant university, the first one in the nation of extension, where you use your research and then your people in the field to get that knowledge out. It was what made American agriculture the envy of the world. and trying to apply some of those principles to the work that we're doing, whether those discoveries are in medicine or in healthcare, in terms of the public health, a lot of issues about that today, or environmental sciences, and then taking that knowledge and getting that out across the state, because there's so many areas which I think could benefit if we can share more effectively, and at the same time, hopefully inspire young people then to say, that's a career I might like to have, I could do that.
Indeed. Okay, a big round of applause for our president. And I do believe that concludes my questions, but I think we're going to have questions from the audience now.
Are we sure these questions haven't been hacked?
That's the Russian. That's.
I am the proxy for audience questions, and I appreciate the submissions, and they run the gamut. I think I'd like to start with state support in Lansing. President Schlissel and President Wilson, you came to Michigan to your presidencies from out of state, of course, instantly had to become advocates for your schools in Lansing. And I'm wondering what that looks like from your two perspectives.
I'll go ahead and start since Mark is deferring. Came in 2013, and that was the year that performance-based metrics were instituted. And it's been an uphill battle since then, because it turns out that the performance-based metrics that the legislature is using penalizes research universities. And so our three universities, proportionally to the other universities, when you look at 2011 budget, are the ones that's furthest away from being made whole. And part of the reason is that we don't get much credit or any credit for training graduate students. And I mentioned that because we're research universities, we have a lot of graduate students, so that if the 40% of the students that we have who are graduate students or professional students, if they were undergraduate students, we would have proportionally more funding for Wayne State. And certainly graduate students, you know, take up, one can argue, disproportionate amount of resources than undergraduate students, but yet we get less funding and almost no funding for our graduate students. So from that perspective, I think we're a little different from many other states I've been in that values of research universities more, or values what research can do for the state more than I think Michigan does.
See, what I know, I got here in 2014, a year or so after Roy, and the legislature and the governor are, you know, very welcoming of meeting with us, talking to us about our aspirations. But, you know, truth be told, we get the same number of dollars now that we got before Governor Snyder arrived. And there was a big, huge dip, a very slow recovery, and those are unadjusted for inflation dollars. We're actually getting roughly the same funding we got in 1997. Think about that. What were your salaries in 1997? And we're bigger than we were 20 plus years ago. So the state has not kept up with its commitments. I think there's good intention. The various committee chairs are well-intentioned. The governor certainly is well-intentioned. But at the end game, when they're trying to balance a budget and everyone's trying to prove how frugal they are, unfortunately, higher ed is usually the component of the aspirational budget that gets thrown under the bus. And it's kicking the can down the road in a way that our state's going to continue to suffer from. You know, we're undaunted. You know, we are at the legislature all the time. The URC does lobbying in this sense. The Michigan Association of State Universities does. I think there's good intention, but it's really going to require, you know, the public when we vote and when we challenge our elected representatives and tell them, look, what's important? How can you have a governor's race without discussing higher ed? I think Governor Engler was right. We've got to call these candidates and not just say, I support higher ed, but be a little specific, please, you know, and make the same kind of promises you do in other areas and then live up to them.
John Engler, your experience in Lansing give you a leg up in advocacy?
Well, I'm trying to use a little bit of that to, we've set tuition for the next school year already. It's the first time Michigan State's ever done a two-year budget, so we've already frozen tuition rates for the 19-20 school year, and we've done that deliberately. We want that to help our recruiting, and we wanted to send a signal that despite the challenges that Michigan State has faced, that we're still a very strong, resilient institution. Now, I also think the legislature, since part of their stated rationale for some of their formulas has been they wanted to see tuition restraint, we've shown them tuition restraint. And so my challenge now to the legislature is, okay, we've done what you've asked, now it's your time to stand and reward those who have, if in fact you were seeking tuition restraint, we've given it to you a year in advance. So I hope that the appropriations process will reward that. That's one of the reasons I have more than a keen interest in what happens, you know, in terms of the conversation about this, because I'd like to see the candidates also say that when there is restraint, and all of us are watching Purdue, where Governor Daniels has been pretty innovative down there, and now I'm seeing his Purdue Global ads all over the air. Digital is going to play a role, but different ways of managing universities also have to be on the table. But I think Mark and Roy made the point, and I certainly would agree, that when there's a response, then we hopefully that will be met with a positive policy response back.
Thanks. Education Secretary DeVos is preparing new guidelines which would shore up due process for students accused of sexual misconduct in campus investigations. How do you think those proposed changes would affect your campuses? Mark, can we start with you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, one of the responsibilities that I think we all take most seriously is to have a safe campus. You know, you can't learn if you feel physically or psychologically threatened. We do that through education. So our freshmen just moved in and started. Our returning students are here. They're getting all kinds of education around how to diminish the frequency, avoid, confront sexual misconduct, how to say no with clarity, how not to drink to the point where you don't know how to say no, or someone doesn't hear you when you say no. So education and prevention is really important. There's a big public debate on whether universities and how universities should be dealing with sexual misconduct at all. John mentions hasn't really been released yet publicly. It's been leaked to the media, the proposed regulations. There'll be a comment period. We have to consider them. You know, our goal is to diminish the frequency of misconduct as close to zero as possible. And when students come forward with complaints, to treat them sensitively and fairly so they feel emboldened to come forward and get our help, but then to treat the complainants and respondents fairly and with good due process. So we'll look at whatever the administration comes out with. We'll discuss this with our community. We'll be thoughtful, and we'll chart a path forward, always open to the idea that we can do it better, and we'll keep working on it.
Governor Engler, sexual misconduct.
Yeah, no, I would say that one thing that would be helpful in, and actually yesterday was my 7-month anniversary, so I all of that experience now, but being on a campus. But I will say that one of the things that has been interesting to look at is the process surrounding the Title IX and the investigations and the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education, which oversees all of that. What would be extraordinarily helpful is clarity coming out of that office, because we actually have litigation at the moment where we're being sued by both parties, the complainant and the respondent, and they both say we handled it improperly, the same case. They may both be right. I don't know. These are very complicated issues, and when you have a due process right, I actually thought that was constitutionally guaranteed and assured, so it is probably good to have the federal courts, I think,
one of the cases, Mark, was a Michigan case with a federal judge locally, but there are several of these cases around the country that have been coming forward now, and it does have to be rethought. You cannot, ride roughshod over anybody's rights, and yet the challenge in this area has been to try to have fairness and compassion in the process, and that is a very interesting thing to try to do with the spotlight on. And this is not, I think I should probably clarify this for the audience, this is not about Nassar so much as it is the whole campus. This is something, and Title IX is not just on campus, by the way. Sometimes there's that misperception. It can be in the Greek system, it could be in the apartment house, it could be down at Cancun on spring break. It's all covered under that. And so the idea of a separate process running inside the university alongside a process in the criminal justice system is a daunting set of things to maneuver around. And so we think we've done an amazing job in terms of changing the system. More claimants are now willing to come forward than in the past because they think they see that the system is listening and responding, but there are backlogs, and this is hard work. It's not an easy process. I would welcome consistency and clarity out of the federal overseers on this one.
President Wilson, a question for you. Midtown Report, Detroit, has a revival underway and a lot of real estate development underway. That provides opportunities for Wayne State, I'm sure. Does it also provide challenges?
It does. The opportunities probably outweigh the challenges, but certainly one of the challenges is that historically we've had students not necessarily live right on campus, but live around campus. You know, a lot of the apartments in the, a half mile radius of Wayne State, many of them catered to students. Well, now they're getting priced out of the market because of all the development that's going on, and so that is creating some challenges for us. So that's one of the reasons why we decided to invest in student housing this year and next year. Our new Anthony Wayne apartments just opened up about 2 weeks ago. We were having to put students up in hotels because we just didn't have any room, and they're just getting priced out of the Midtown market.
Very good. President Schlissel, we're just 1 week into the 2018 football season.
Go Blue!
And Jim Harbaugh is already on the hot seat. What are your thoughts on the win-at-all-costs dynamic in college football and basketball?
Well, I would confront the premise. He's not on the hot seat. He's under contract for 4 more years. It's funny. I joke with some of our coaches who all expect to win the league every year and to have perfect records and the like. It's mathematically impossible for everyone to have a perfect record, right? After the first game, anyway, right? It's very competitive. It's exciting. I've learned in my 4 years, 4+ years, it plays a very powerful cultural role in all universities. It keeps alumni connected. The attention that our school got in the run-up to this reinvigorated series with Notre Dame we played the other night down in South Bend was wonderful attention for the university. And the Notre Dame president and I use it as an occasion to announce a collaboration around research to deal with Puerto Rico's recovery after last year's hurricane, for example. So we can reflect a lot of that attention positively. I think we have to be sure to remember that the competitors are actually students. They're 20 years old. They do great things. They're way more talented than I ever was. But they're just kids. They're going to make mistakes. And this is their chance to be a college student, too. What I admire about Coach Harbaugh is his kids graduate, and they do well in class. They take their studies seriously. He makes a commitment to each kid that he brings to campus. Obviously, they're the most ambitious folks I know on campus. They want to win every single game. But more importantly, they want every student athlete to have a great experience while they're doing it. So If you want to quote something about a hot seat, I don't know where it came from.
Well, can we agree that John Engler's on the hot seat?
No, John has a one-year sort of contract, right? So that's not much of a hot seat.
John, would you like the final word?
Well, I think college athletics are important, but I don't know if you want me to comment on that or you want me to comment. I'm not commenting on Mr. Harbaugh. I think he's doing the best he can, so I will leave him alone. I think from a standpoint of just the university, I do think that it's a balance, and it's been interesting. I've been a fan for a long time, and to be on the campus, everything has a place, and the athletics department of any major university is going to be an important place. One of the things that's tough is sort of how the student athletes are singled out and treated different than students. And I think Mark's point, they are still students. And some people don't want to give them the rights that we afford. If the student in the political science class the student on the livestock judging team, we have one of those at Michigan State, or the student in the debate team gets in trouble, they're not on the front page. They're still a student, but their student rights and their privacy is protected. And Michigan's got this oddity where they treat a student athlete as a public figure, even if that student athlete's name has never been in print in their entire, university career. So it makes the management of that very challenging. Eyebrows were raised when I named Bill Beekman the athletic director, but Bill is actually an interesting man, long experience at the university, a lawyer, an MBA from the Kellogg School at Northwestern, and a really good, strong, ethical, honest leader, and he'll do a very good job, but he's not the typical. But Tom Izzo made the remark, and I think this is maybe what puts it all in perspective. He said, this world has changed so much that we don't have, it isn't just the job that the former coach gets now. You don't just put that person in the AD's job. And I think Bill's commitment not only is full compliance at Michigan State, but also full participation in the activities of the university. And so for that, I'm very happy. And I told all the students earlier, come to Michigan State. If you want to see winning programs, come up there too. We got those as well. So glad to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. And if I can have your thanks to our panel and to Kim.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, John. Folks, we're so lucky to have these terrific leaders at all of our 15 state universities, but I want to thank these three for their time and effort today. One more round of applause, please. Kimberly Gill, thank you. You rocked it, and we look forward to watching you on Local 4 tonight. And John Woolman, as always, you always do an outstanding job. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time and attention. This meeting of the Detroit Economic Club is adjourned.